I'd like to talk about this little phrase, as bad as it's ever been. But I want to pose it as a question. I want you to think about that. You ever heard that phrase? Somebody said, oh, it's bad. I was raised with a lot of colloquial expressions. One of them was, cheer up, things could be worse. Well, I heard someone say, I cheered up, and sure enough, it got worse. You know, we can look around and think, oh my, it's worse than it's ever been. You know, I've heard most of my adult life, for sure, that it used to be better. Things used to be better. And in different aspects, the world used to be a better place. So I want to stop and think this morning about, is that a true statement? I was thinking of a verse of a song that I would guess all of us know, One Day at a Time. Ever heard that song? Second verse of that song says, do you remember when you walked among men? Well, Jesus, you know if you're looking below that it's worse now than then. Pushing and shoving, crowding my mind, so for my sake, Lord, teach me to take one day at a time. Do you know anything about that song? It was written about 1974 by someone before I tell you that. Do you know it went to the top of the charts? It was a pretty popular song. You know what chart it was at the top of? Country. And then it was at the top of a pop song. Finally made it to be classified as Southern Gospel. And today, I mean, it's almost 50 years since that song was written. Most people wouldn't think of it as a country song at all. The person that wrote that song was a pretty popular country song writer. It wrote a lot of songs for country and western singers. I would assume that would be the way it would be correctly termed. And they wrote this song, from what little I know about it, not from the perspective that they were looking on at the decline of morality and things like that. They were just feeling overwhelmed in their own life. They felt a lot of pressures, and they wrote this song, and it ended up being real popular. It had been recorded by, I think, over 600 different professional singers, and that's like that's a high watermark for songwriters. If your song gets recorded by that many different artists, that's a claim to fame, I guess. So I want to ask you a question this morning. Is it worse now than then? When was then? I think sometimes that I didn't find this real definitively, but I think the songwriter had it in their mind that the time that they were living in was worse than when Jesus was here. So if that's what they meant, I'll take it like that for this morning's thought. I'll ask you this question. Is society worse now than when Jesus was here? I'm going to go out on a limb and just make a statement this morning. It's a lot better than it was then. And I want us to really think about why it's better now and where we're at in the state of betterness, okay? So the thing I wrote up here is bad as it's ever been with a question mark behind it. You know, the enemy wants to discourage us. He wants to bring us down to the point that we feel like there's no hope. And I like to think about just this morning, I the only thing better than having a congregation with some young couples in it and children and all that is having more young couples and children. That's the only thing better. You know, I just want y'all to be encouraged, because I remember when I was a young person and maybe even newly married and would hear people that was my age and older saying things like, "Oh, my times are bad. It's worse than it's ever been." Well, I don't know. I take exception to that. I think that time right now where we're at, it fits on a timeline, and Lord willing, we'll get into this a little bit more, if not this morning, this evening. But there has been a steady decline. I don't disagree with that at all. But it's still better now than it was when Jesus was here. All right? It's a lot better now, and I'd like to try to prove it to you this morning. I'd like for you to understand how much better we have it now than when Jesus was here. I've been started reading in the book of Romans for my personal devotions, and I haven't got very far because I've been thinking about what I've been reading a lot. In the first chapter of Romans, it begins, the first six verses, he seems to kind of talk about himself a little bit, not in a bad way, just kind of identifying himself. And in verse 7, he identifies who he's writing to. He says, "To all that be in Rome," not just some of those at Rome, but all of those that be in Rome, "beloved of God, called to be saints, grace to you and peace from God our Father and the Lord Jesus Christ." He was talking to all of the Christians in Rome, whether they be Jewish or Gentile. He wanted the gospel to go out to all mankind, but he was specifically talking to, we might say, the Church of God in Rome. All of those that were accepting Christ as the Messiah, as the Christ, he was addressing all of them, whether they be Jew or Gentile. So the whole first chapter of Romans, he talks about the state of of society. He goes into in depth and talks about the impact of idolatry. Nero was the emperor that put Paul to death. And I don't know when Paul wrote the book of Romans, whether it was after, I don't think it was after he got to Rome, but maybe it was. If it was, Nero was in power. If not, if it was earlier in Paul's life, maybe he wrote it when another emperor was in effect. But Paul confronts many of the moral faults in the society that they all lived in. In many respects, I know this is, it may be a new thing for some of you here today, maybe not, but in many respects, immorality and all of those kind of things was at a much greater level than it is today. It impacted art. It impacted their sculptures. It impacted their paintings. It impacted so much. There are so many things that were captured by, they didn't have pictures, but they had artists that captured things that was a reflection of their society. And today we look back on and say, oh, well, that was just the time. There was people that really lived like that. Moral degradation was at the bottom. I believe, and some people today might look on and say, well, don't understand very much about politics, but I believe the reason the Roman Empire collapsed, the political system collapsed, was because of their moral collapse. That's what I believe. I believe it brought weakness, it brought chaos, it brought confusion. And Paul addresses this in this. No time in history has there ever been more immorality that preyed on the young and the defenseless than at the time that Jesus came into this world and the time that the disciples and the apostles lived. Sporting events, people were in a place socially where they supported sporting events and recreational activities, and they didn't have any stuntmen or computer imagery or any of that. What happened was for real. There was bloodshed for recreation. There was all kinds of practices and things that happened because their minds was in the gutter and because they had wicked things in their hearts. And what caused all of this? It was paganism. We feel like there's a rise in paganism, and I believe that in our world today, right now. But paganism is not in control yet. All right? I think it wants to be in control, but paganism not in control. Did you know that in the time that Jesus came, that Judaism, those that practiced Judaism and were trying to adhere to the old law, was an extremely small number, that society at large across the world, not just where Jesus and the disciples live, but across the world there was people that worshiped all kinds of images and had what we call mythology about the origin of whether it was dragons or half people, half creatures, and all of those kind of things. People offered sacrifices, whether it was animal sacrifices or human sacrifices, or they had sensual practices, because it was all around them. And the leaders, those that were high-ranking officials, openly practiced and solicited things that we think today is way off limits as a society, not just us. At us, as a people of God, it's like, I can't believe this is happening in our world today. But it was openly practiced. And you might say, advertised around them. It was awful, folks. When Josephus says that the people chose to build a gymnasium in Jerusalem, and I'm going to tell you that there's a whole thing that is associated with that that's despicable, and it was on the forefront. So when this songwriter says, Lord, if you're looking down now, you know it's worse now than then. I don't think they knew what they was talking about. It was awful. The people, mankind needed a savior. They needed to get oriented with who God was and what was right and what was wrong, because they were promoting everything that was fleshly. It was, I can't go into it. It would make y'all all turn red, and me too. It would be awfully embarrassing to talk about in detail the things that went on when Jesus was here, all around them. Why does the scripture talk about so much when it talks about adultery and fornication and all those things? Why does it mention it so much? It's because it was going on all around them. And it was something that was being promoted by paganism and idolatry. And we feel like it's being promoted today, but it's not in the, it doesn't have the level of power that it had then. Down there in verse 27, it talks about some things that we thought, you know, I was naive as a young person and thought it was a new sin, but it's not. It's something that's been around a long time. It's been, I could give you details here this morning that none of us would like to know. It's been around, some of that comes from the Greek and the Roman philosophers, and all of that talks about promoting this very thing. Those big names, the people that are looked on as some of the ancient philosophers that help shape Western civilization and all those kind of things, and rule and order, and y'all would know the names if I mentioned them. They had these kind of inclinations. It makes me cringe to think that we would esteem some of those ancient Greek philosophers as being so much of a benefit to mankind, and they promoted the very things that the gospel came directly in conflict with. I'm going to tell you, it was worse then than now. I'm not saying we got it, everything's a bed of roses, but it was worse then. You know, when I think of the age that we live in, I realize that we've had it better, much better. And it's because of the impact of Christianity. We've had such, and Christianity has had such a benefit to society. It's still better than it was then. It's still better. There's a lot of sinful things going on around us, and there's a lot of things that's gained popularity and public approval and rights and all of these kind of things that I don't agree with and I know is in conflict with what God wants for people. But we still got it better than they had it then. You know, Christianity is why a prohibition law could get passed. Now, I don't think we'd have a chance today in passing a prohibition. But it passed, I believe, in the Senate by a supermajority when the national prohibition passed. It was passed in like 1919 and went into effect in 1920. A supermajority. That means that not just 51% or 50.5%. It was, I can't remember, 68% or 86% or something like that were in favor of adding an amendment to our Constitution that it was illegal to sell alcohol in the United States. What's the chances of us getting that passed today? None. What was the... But it's still better. It's still better today than it was then. That wasn't even on the horizon in the time of Jesus when he was here. You know, Christianity is why there's been laws made that's still on the books that adultery is against the law. Don't know that anybody ever gets prosecuted for it now, but and there's talk about when they discover these old antiquated laws, they want to do away with them in our world today. But you know, Christianity is the reason they ever got put in the law book. Do you know that Christianity was a major contributor in ending slavery in the United States? It was a major component of that. Do you know Christianity was a motivation behind blue laws? You know what that is? Businesses being restricted on Sunday? Do you know how far back that goes? I didn't know this. And it was at a time of apostasy, but did you know that the very first laws regarding prohibition of Sunday labor for religious reasons was put in place by Constantine in 321 A.D.? I think he probably had a distorted view, but did you know that Christianity did make an impact? There was some changes that came because of that. And it got better and better and better and better. And I feel like that, you know, the reason that the colonies of the United States were populated with the people wanted religious freedom. They wanted to be able to implement Christian principles in society at large. That's why they came to the United States, many of them. They called them Puritans. It's not been so long ago now. There's still some survivors of this big thing, but the nations living under Christian principles banded together, and they called themselves the Allied Forces. You think of what would have happened if the Axis powers had have been the conquerors in that conflict? You think of the impact that we would have had on our society, extermination of certain peoples because of ethnic background or eye color or hair color or something like that. If you don't meet these guidelines, we're just going to rub you out. You know, that's what was in place when Jesus was here. You think about what happened when Herod got the word that Jesus had been born in Bethlehem. What did he do? Could a leader of our nation get by with that today? I don't think so. There would be a revolt in our United States if our leader tried to do something like Herod did. But Herod went on being king. He wouldn't be king here very long. Somebody would take him out of office if not completely out. Did you know that if the Axis powers had been the ones that had been the conquerors, that our society would have changed 180 degrees? The devil's been working, folks, and he's still trying to undermine the Christian principles. But I want us to get a picture of the impact that Christianity has had on the world. There is more compassion. There's more consideration. There's more equality in our world today because of Jesus Christ than there ever has been in the history of mankind. I believe that we live in an age, and this is, I want us to get this thought. I want to try to make it kind of short this morning, but I want us to get this thought that we live in an age where those that really love the Lord and really want to please Him, we look around and it's so easy for us to see things crumbling, Christian values being eroded away. And I believe that's the true statement. But it's still better than the time when the Apostle Paul lived. It's still better than the time when Polycarp lived. It's still better than those. There is a more sympathy towards Christian principles today than there was in 100 A.D. It's similar to another time in history. And I'm not a history buff or an expert, but I find some things fascinating. It's similar to a time when Joshua was alive and at the end of his life. I asked my wife this morning who lived the longest, Joshua or Caleb. She didn't know the answer, and I don't know if you know the answer or not either. But if we turn back to that familiar setting, I'm not going to read a lot. I'm talking about things in general this morning a lot. But in the 24th chapter of Joshua, that's the last chapter of that book, Joshua, I feel like, realized that he was coming to the end of his life. And this is where, in the 15th verse, where he asked the people, said, "You're going to have to make a choice. What are you going to do? Which way are you going to go? What are you going to give your allegiance to?" I think Joshua realized that he was not going to be here long. I don't know if it was months, days, or a few years before he left. But he said it in the 15th verse, he says, "But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." And that's a commitment that every one of you are going to have to make. Every one of you are going to have to come to the place that young people, middle-aged people, old people, we're going to have to come to that place that we're willing to say, "But as for me and my house, we're not going to let anything go. We're going to live for God." So I think about the status of where Joshua was. Did you know Joshua, if he overlived Caleb, if he outlived him, assuming that he did, he was the last one that witnessed Moses bringing the people together. He was the last one that witnessed the plagues in Egypt. He was the last one that witnessed the crossing of the Red Sea. He was the last one that was of the spies that went in and scoped the land out. He was the last one that endured the 40 years in the wilderness until all of his contemporaries passed away. All of them, every one of them except Moses, Caleb, and Joshua died out there in the wilderness. All of those memories of what God had done in Egypt and their mighty deliverance, every one of them lost that. They all was gone. And they got right up there ready to cross the Jordan, and God took Moses. Moses wasn't able to go in. Caleb and Joshua went in, they were the only ones that had a memory that went all the way back to what it was like to live in Egypt. Joshua most likely knew as a young man what it was like to work as a slave. You ever thought about that? He witnessed his lifetime going from a slave to a leader of a mighty band of people that went in victorious, where walls fell down and the river stopped flowing and they walked across the river. Joshua witnessed that. He went from a slave, someone that suffered persecution because he wasn't making enough bricks. Joshua went from that place, that station in life, all the way through the mighty deliverance and exodus out of Egypt, all the way into the promised land, and he was the one that was at the leading position of this mighty band of people. He was the one that done the negotiating with the enemies when there had to be some. He's the one that said, take them out. He's the one God was speaking to. And then he told the people, this is our plan. This is the way we're going to do it. Can you imagine what that was like? Kind of beyond my scope to fully realize what Joshua had witnessed. And over the course of his life, he saw the Ten Commandments. He saw the water coming out of the rock. He saw the glow on Moses' face. He saw all of the evidence. He saw the pillar of fire by night, the cloud by day. He saw all of that. And now he is, it says here in the 31st verse, I believe it is, that somewhere is here, how old he lived. Maybe this was 29th verse. Came to pass after these things that Joshua the son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died, being 110 years old. 110 years old, and he was gone. And assuming that he was the last one, that he outlived Caleb, he was the last one that had all those memories. He heard the law the first time it was read to the people. The first time that Moses was able to tell. He was up on the mountain with Moses. Did you know that? When he went up to get the Ten Commandments, Joshua was with him. He was his servant, his right-hand man. So we have Joshua that witnessed all of those things firsthand. I believe Joshua knew the benefit behind the law. It was different than the world they lived in. They were in amongst a bunch of pagans that worshiped a god for every day of the week and maybe month of the year. I don't know. They had a numerous deities. Joshua was convinced that there was one true God. He knew there was a plan. He saw the value. He saw the essence of the law. And he saw the people saying things like, whatever God says, you just tell us what God says and we'll do it. That's the way the people responded to Moses. And here, when Joshua called their hand on it and said, here, what are you going to do? They said, oh, we're going to serve the Lord. That's what we're going to do. But you know, it ended up, every household had to make that commitment. Every household had to make that decision. And in the course of Joshua's time, he saw the people enthused. He saw the skilled labor that went into building all of the tabernacle and all of those intricate things. He saw the God come down and anoint that place and be there with the people. He saw all of that thing. And he saw the people enthused and then pull back. And then they were reminded and they would come a little closer. And it, oh, some people use this expression of like something is like herding cats. Sometimes I think Joshua looked at it to people like he was trying to herd a bunch of cats. And he's wanting them, you know, to have a want to themselves. And he says, choose, what are you going to do? Are you going to serve the Lord or not? I believe he saw a deterioration. He saw the pinnacle of the blessings of God. Do you believe that? I do. But in his lifetime, he saw not only the height, but he saw people's enthusiasm and their interest kind of diminishing and drifting off. And that's why he said, today, you need to make a choice. What are you going to do? So I would like to compare that to the time that we live in right now. You know, I believe it's better now than it was when Jesus was here. And I believe that our generation, my generation, has experienced some of the world's greatest benefits of Christian principles. But you know what's happening? They're getting watered down. And they're getting whittled away. And they're getting cast to the side. And it's getting to the place that pagan things are taking over. It is. Is it worse than when Jesus was here? Nope, I don't agree with that. Is it worse than it was 200 years ago? I would agree with that. There's less consciousness of what God would have us do today than there was in 1820. You know, I believe that when people came to this continent, when the Europeans came to this continent, that Christianity was on a exponential growth in both numbers and in understanding. And when people came here, they felt like it was a fresh start to allow themselves to get closer to the Lord. I could go into a lot of other things that I think was going on, but I believe that as people came to this continent, they were looking for an opportunity to draw closer to God, and they did. And I believe there was more light and more understanding, and the Reformation that started in 1530 approximately, I believe, was continuing. It was just, there were true, sincere people that was gaining more light and more understanding, as just like there was people that was falling away into apostasy too. But there was, I believe that there's been a pinnacle reached in understanding. I'm not saying that the Lord can't reveal more truth to us today, but I want us to realize that as we look out across the horizon, we're kind of like Joshua was. And my call for us today is, where are we going to be? I want you young people to know, I feel like it's better now than when Jesus was here. But I also want you to know, I feel like we're in a time kind of like Joshua. And Joshua realized people's enthusiasm for the things of God wasn't like it was when they first crossed the Jordan River. And that's why he was calling. You're going to have to make a choice. So I want you to be encouraged. You got it better than some people could have ever imagined. There are principles in our society that's still there today. You know, if you said to a total stranger in our United States, if a total stranger asked you today, what'd you do on Sunday? You said, well, we went to church. You know what their reaction would be? Oh, okay. There's a level of understanding there. You know what it would be if the Axis powers had won? You're guilty. That's unacceptable. You need to be prosecuted. That would have been the mindset of society. We wouldn't be here today. We wouldn't have a chapel like this today if the Axis powers had won the war. It wouldn't be there. It'd be something different. We'd be meeting underground, so to speak. So we've got a lot of things going for us. But individually, in each home, you're going to have to make that choice. Like Joshua was calling, what are you going to do? You're going to support it, or are you going to let it fall away? You're going to help it be knit together, or are you going to let it crumble? You're going to hold the values, you're going to keep the standards, or are you going to let it fizzle out? Are you going to seek the Lord with all your heart, all your mind, all your soul, and all your strength? Or are you just going to, I don't know, kind of, sort of, not really, maybe kind of, you know, that's not going to be where the victory is. You know, I would love to see, I've said this before, I'd love to see it, where it would start in any community. It could be this one. I'd love to see revival break out and people realize that there really is a God and that we really need to do business with Him and there really is a higher calling. I'd love for that to happen, but may it start with us and being determined. I'm not giving up no ground. Anybody got the words of that song?